You're listening to the Bliss Runner Podcast, episode number 10. This podcast is for any woman who has ever had a challenge in her sex life. Whether you've lost interest in sex in your long-term relationship, orgasms have become elusive, or you've just been longing for something more, something deeper that you can't quite even articulate, this podcast is here to help. In this show, we'll explore how you can transform your experience of sex by learning the subtle art of awakening your sexual energy. Now, this is not just woo-woo stuff. It's tangible, and it's having a profound effect on women's lives. We'll hear stories by women like you and me who've moved from lack of sexual enjoyment to incredible, expanded, ecstatic states by accessing this energy inside. We'll also talk to authors, teachers, and practitioners in the field for guidance on how you can get started on this deeply gratifying journey. I can tell you that it has completely changed my life, and I know it can enrich yours. I'm really glad you're here. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the show. I am so pleased that you've joined me this week because I have a very special guest today. Her name is Sherry Winston, and she's the author of one of my very favorite books on this topic, Women's Anatomy of Arousal. If you haven't read this book already, you really need to get your hands on it. Sherry began her career as a certified nurse midwife, and gradually she began to notice a connection between what she was observing in the birthing process and what she was experiencing in the unfolding of her own sex life. And this led her to become more and more interested in the topic of sexuality. So a number of years ago, she started the Center for Intimate Arts, and she developed what she calls her holistic sexuality curriculum. She now devotes herself full-time to teaching, running the center, coaching, and writing. So please join me in welcoming Sherry. Sherry, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure to chat with you.
Oh my gosh, it's a thrill for me. I am such a huge fan of Women's Anatomy of Arousal, and it was really enlightening for me to read the book, and actually I found you through another podcast. I heard an interview with you, and just the way you were talking and the information you were sharing, you're so warm and relatable. I couldn't wait to have you on the show.
Oh, thank you. Well, I'm so happy to get to talk whenever possible about my favorite subjects, like Women's Anatomy of Arousal and sex and awakening our sexuality. So thanks for giving me the opportunity.
Well, it's my pleasure entirely. So tell us, before we get started in your own story of awakening, tell us a little bit about what you do, and then we'll back up and start with the story.
Good. Okay, so I am now what I call a holistic sexuality teacher. And I made that term up because there wasn't a good description of what I did. I used to be a midwife and nurse practitioner and childbirth educator. And, you know, I can say, you know, I was a midwife, and people have an idea of what that is. Mm-hmm. But if I say I'm a sex teacher, most people assume that means I teach high school sex education.
Right.
And that's not really what I do. Predominantly, I teach adults. And sometimes I call it pleasure-centered sex ed for grown-ups.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really integral because it's about who we are and how we operate and all the different parts of us and how it's connected and our relationship with ourselves and then our relationships with other people. So the thing about our sexuality is it's complicated. It's not just one thing or one simple thing. And so I think we all can use to learn about our sexuality, because where are we going to learn this stuff? We didn't come pre-programmed knowing
right
how to have great sex or great relationships. And even if you did get sex ed in high school, it didn't teach you how to have great sex.
Yeah, so, it's completely right? Missing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's what I do.
And how long ago did you start doing this kind of work?
Well, that's such a good question. There was a transition. So I was working as a midwife, and I'd already been a childbirth educator for all the time I was doing midwifery. And at the end of my midwifery career, I had started teaching a handful of classes I called women craft classes. And so there were things like vaginal ecology or menstrual health, things like that. And at that time, I had also included the class about female genital anatomy and all the parts that are missing from our model and what's there. And then I retired from birthing babies and was still working part-time as a nurse practitioner, and over the next 5 years transitioned into working full-time doing sexuality education. And over that time, just my curriculum just grew and grew and grew. So
I see.
how long have I been doing this?
Yeah, I can see the problem with that question now.
I will say that I haven't had another job other than teaching about sex and writing books and such since I think at least 12 years ago, if not more.
Tell me, I am really curious to know what the moment was like when you discovered the parts of the anatomy that were excluded that we'd never learned, because that came as quite a shocker for me, I have to say.
It was quite a shocker for me too. So keep in mind, I was already working as a certified nurse midwife, which means, besides the fact that I had studied anatomy to become a childbirth educator, I was a massage therapist before that, studied anatomy in nursing school, and then studied it again, in midwifery nurse practitioner school. So I had studied, high level anatomy, focusing on female parts for a good part of that 4 times. I'm working as a midwife. I think I know everything, right?
Yeah, well, with good reason.
You'd think. And then I picked up a book called New View of a Woman's Body. And there was a chapter about female genital anatomy that included parts I had never heard of. And I literally went, "What? Like, you've got to be kidding me." And I looked at the pictures and I read the text and I went, "Okay, I'm going to check this out." And I did my homework because, I'm a good student and I own the equipment, and I checked on my own body and went, "Oh my gosh, I do. I have vestibular bulbs. I'd never heard of them. I have vestibular bulbs." And then I start, when I'm doing exams, I'm under the women's bodies. I'm like, yeah, they have them too. And I'm talking to my friends and they have them too. And nobody knows what they are. And we've all got them. And it wasn't in my education. And that literally was such an awakening moment of, I don't know it all. And what I learned in school wasn't necessarily complete or correct. And that got me started. I mean, from then on, I was on a mission. What else am I missing? What else did I not learn in school? And over the years, I pieced together all these parts and connections and understandings that just were not in our education, and unfortunately, are still not. And
It
so
makes me
that's.
so mad. Doesn't it make you mad?
I was mad also. The mad was definitely a part of it. And in fact, there's still I still have moments where I'm frustrated because I came out with this book 10 years ago. Oh, no, I started writing it 10 years. I came out with it I guess 7 years ago. And I guess I'm hoping that one day everyone will go, "Well, of course we have those parts. Everybody knows that." We're not there yet.
No,
We're
we're not
far.
there yet.
But that's why we need to, that's why this information has to get out there, because we need to know if we own the parts. We need to know if we partner with somebody who has these parts, and our healthcare providers need to know.
Oh, okay, so putting that aside, let's go back into your own story. So you've got this professional career that is intimately tied to women's health, women's sexuality. Now, tell me a little bit about your own evolution in your experience of your sexuality from the standpoint of of pleasure of the thing that you teach?
Well, you know, I mean, it's a long story, but I'll start with the fact that I learned everything I know how to do. And I think it's really important for other people to hear that. It wasn't like the orgasm fairy didn't come and sprinkle orgasm dust on my cradle.
Uh-huh.
So as a teenager, I had to learn how to give myself an orgasm, mm-hmm. and I learned that. And then there was the challenge of partners because they didn't have a clue, and I had no communication skills at that point, so I didn't know how to teach them. So there was a lot of the typical, you know, sort of fumbling. Sometimes things kind of worked, and sometimes they didn't, experience. And then at a certain point, I guess probably my early 20s, I realized I needed to start talking and communicating with partners. And I was able to sort of start figuring out how to do that. That took years.
Yeah.
and help partners understand how to help me have an orgasm when I was with them. And then it took, I didn't have orgasms with intercourse, like most women don't.
Mm-hmm.
Ladies, hear that? Most women don't, or not easily. And I didn't, and I still thought, you know, there was something kind of wrong with me. And then over a number of years, I learned how to do that as well.
Yeah.
And part of that learning was sort of conscious, and a lot of it was unconscious. And here's where I had this huge advantage. I started teaching childbirth education classes when I was about 20.
Mm-hmm.
And so in my classes, I was teaching women how to use their pelvic floor muscles and how to release their sound and how to connect with themselves and tune into what was going on and how to use all of these inner tools.
Mm-hmm.
And I did not know it, but I was unconsciously training myself.
I see. Yeah, that makes total sense. Mm-hmm. All of those skills are part of the same experience when you're awakening your sexuality. So that's amazing.
Right. So that went like for 12 years. I didn't even realize I was doing it. Mm-hmm. So I was helping women free their sound during their labors and I was helping them learn how to get into the altered state of labor and so I'm doing all those things and my personal sexual experience is getting better and better. It's getting easier to have orgasms and I can now have, you know, like 3 in a lovemaking session and I started to figure out how to have orgasms with intercourse and that just got better and better, but I still didn't realize that I was training myself.
Mm-hmm.
And then in my early 30s, I had another one of those epiphanies where I went, I've been training myself.
Can you take us to that moment? How did that light bulb go off?
Well, actually, I had a new partner. And after we had sex a number of times, he said, you have the most amazing, I'm not sure what language you prefer to use on your show.
Any language you want to use is fine.
What he said was, you have the most amazing pussy I've ever experienced. And I went, yeah, right. Of course, you know, guys say things like that, you know. No, he's like, I'm not kidding. And he's somebody who had a lot of partners. Mm. And I'm like, well, come on. Like, can't all women do the things that I do with my muscles? And he's like, not even close. And I went, what? Oh, wait. Oh, I've been, of course I can do all kinds of things because I've been connecting my breathing, my sound, my pelvic floor muscles, mm-hmm. My energy, my intention, my understanding of the anatomy. It all was like this blinding flash of that I've been training myself.
Oh, wow. Cool.
It was. So, then the next part of the story is really good because then I said, well, if I've come this far in my abilities without even meaning to, what would happen if I started learning stuff on purpose?
Right.
And at that point, I started going to Tantra classes and Taoist sexuality practices and some Native American sexuality. And so I started studying sex, the sacred sexuality, different traditions. on purpose, at that point, assuming this was all about my own sexual experience. This was about making sex better for me and my partners. And lo and behold, everything I was learning in sex world was applicable to helping my women birth.
Oh, yeah, of
Right?
course.
Of course. And again, it took me a while to kind of go like, oh, wait, I learned this technique and now I'm applying it to help this woman, open up and let her baby out. And at that point, it all sort of came together in that the wonderful realization that it is all integral. It's all connected. It's part of the same system, same equipment, same spiritual journey, same energetic experience, same nerve ending, same biochemistry, right? It's all the same. Labor and arousal are the same thing. They're the same state. And yeah, and so that's how I got where I am, and that's sort of the basis. Almost everything I teach is this understanding of how integral and connected it really is.
So, did you have, once you started studying Tantra and Taoism and all of these other disciplines, did you have further levels of awakening in your own personal life?
Well, I definitely did. I mean, it just kept getting better and better and easier and easier. And, I learned how to have, energy orgasms, right? Hands-off orgasms. I learned to ejaculate when I was, I don't know, around 40, I guess. I just kept, there just kept being more skills to learn. I think it's like learning to play an instrument, that you can just keep expanding. You can just keep making different kinds of music. And so there was this wonderful, very fun, exciting, progression from, well, if I can do that, oh, I wonder if I could do that. Well, I'll try. Let's see. And sure enough, pretty much at that point, it got easier and easier to figure out what I wanted to learn and to learn it.
That's awesome. I have to share that you are the reason that I learned how to have a vaginal orgasm.
Yay.
I know. So on your podcast, I remember on the podcast that I heard you, it was Sex with Jaya. I heard you say something to the effect of women can learn how to do this. I mean, you guys were talking about the challenge that many women, most women have having vaginal orgasms. And when I heard you say that, it really it hit me because I'd never heard anybody say that before. It was always posed as either you can or you can't, either you're lucky or you're not lucky, you know? And I thought I was just SOL. So, I just determined, oh, okay, well, I'm going to figure this out. And I did. And, that then it was from that point, it was sort of a domino effect because, learning that internal orgasm, and the sort of the way that you can keep that going, and to multiple orgasms, and then just, it all sort of flowed from there. So I kind of have all of this I have to thank you for all of what I'm doing right now, because if you hadn't said those simple words, if you can learn this, I don't know if I ever would have stumbled upon all of this.
Well, I'm so thrilled that you did learn, and this is part of why I do what I do, because I kind of get off on hearing that, not in an excited sort of thrilled way. I'm not having an orgasm by hearing you say it, but I really do. It just gives me so much pleasure to know that I'm sharing and spreading ideas that help women and men have more pleasure, because we have so much potential, so much pleasure potential. And one of the big things that blocks us from it is this idea that you got it or you didn't. And instead of realizing that this is learnable, these are learnable skills. And just like speaking French or playing golf, anyone can learn. You just need to decide, I'm going to learn. And then you learn a little thing and you learn the next thing and you learn the next thing. And it takes time and it takes practice. And wonderful thing about sex, though, is we actually are hardwired for this to happen. So it's actually easier than learning to play the piano, I think. Mm. Right? We're hardwired for pleasure. We are actually designed to be born ecstatic.
Mm.
And I have been at many births where the babies, particularly at home births or really, you know, a wonderful birth center birth where you really have created this ecstatic environment and everyone is just, you know, helping create this space so the woman can go into her ecstasy and the baby gets born and everybody's high, right? Everybody's in this altered state and the babies come out. They're not crying and screaming like you see them on TV. Mm-hmm. They come out, they're beaming like little Buddhas. They're like, yeah, you know, they're just like, and they've got this big smile on their face. What's this like babies don't smile when they're born. They all have this beautiful beatific smile on their face and everyone in the room is in that zone.
Mm.
And it's such an amazing and precious thing. And, of course, most people don't get that kind of birth experience. Yeah. Most of us weren't born that way. Mm-hmm. And if you're having a baby in a, you know, sort of the Western, modern American way, you're probably not going to have that experience, and neither is your baby. But when you see that, you go, oh, this is the template. This is inside us. And then life happens and we probably didn't get it to start with, but then even if we did, you know, stuff happens and it gets buried and we get disconnected from our bodies and we internalize negative messages. And so for us, it's about rediscovering, yeah, reconnecting, because it's already there inside us.
Oh, that's so awesome. Yeah, it is. It is. And that's, you know, I was really, really shut off from my ability to feel pleasure and hadn't had desire for a decade, mm-hmm, basically since I had kids. And so when all of this, what's that?
And that's another thing people need to talk about, right? Like these things like having kids that really, you know, sort of throw us and what we can do about it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. That's a biggie.
It isn't it? Yeah. Okay. So sorry, you were saying you had kids and.
Yeah. No, I mean, my point is just that if I can find my way back or find my way to this innate internal ecstatic energy, then anybody can.
Yeah. Well, I think it just to hear that message is so important for people that there are paths back to it. And there are things that can really, you know, throw us off the path of desire and disconnect us from our bodies. You know, so many, I mean, trauma, you know, childbirth, having kids is huge. Menopause for women. Oh, mm-hmm, my gosh, menopause kicked my libido's butt.
Did it?
Oh, it did. Oh, huge. And luckily, I feel so blessed that I know what I know, because otherwise I would be one of those women who's like, well, I guess it's all over for me now.
Well, let's talk about this for a minute, because I'm on the cusp of, I'm in perimenopause and you know, kind of any minute expecting it to happen. So when you felt the effects on your libido, did it, was it during perimenopause or after you stopped having periods?
It was after I stopped. And perimenopause, for me, and often for a lot of women, it's like your ovaries are going, come on, make one more baby. Don't give up now. So, for me, I didn't really feel it so much in perimenopause. Maybe at the end when I was sort of, there was a year or two and I don't know, maybe I had, you know, just like a few periods or something and I started to kind of feel the libido waning, but it was really after I was completely done.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really, it was like postpartum for me, which the same thing where it was kind of like, oh, I used to have a libido. I guess it's gone now. And the same thing with postpartum, which is that if you can just let it go, it's certainly an option, or you can say, I don't want to let this go. So I'm going to do things to stimulate my libido, to keep it going. If you have a partner, they'll be pretty happy if you work on this stuff. Mm-hmm. otherwise they're sort of, you know, like, too bad.
Yeah.
That's not making for a happy and healthy relationship. So certainly, you know, in both postpartum and menopause, I had motivation, because I was partnered. But mostly my motivation really came from within, that I didn't want to let this go.
Mm-hmm.
That this was too good and valuable and a vital part of my life. But it took a conscious effort. It took thinking about it in a way that it hadn't before. It took deciding to get turned on. It's sort of like, here's my analogy. Before menopause, there was always a low flame under my pot of water.
Okay.
And so my water was always kind of warm. And then something would happen. It would turn the flame up. My water would get hot.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the motivation to be sexual. I was horny, right? I was like, I'm horny. I'll do something about it.
Right.
I'll have sex with myself. I'll have sex with my partner. After menopause, it's like there is not a flame under the pot of water anymore. If I want to get turned on, I have to decide I'm going to go collect some wood and I'm going to build a fire.
Okay.
Right? And that's a decision. I have to decide I want to go there now. So the motivation wasn't coming from this internal kind of heat. It was coming from, oh, here's a thought. It would be good to feel turned on.
Mm-hmm.
So I will now go do the things that will turn me on. And then once I'm in the turn on, I'm like, oh yeah, this is really good. I'm glad I went here.
Mm-hmm.
But it would be easy to get distracted, and not have it. And it's still not as big a priority for me as it was.
Yeah.
It's still more of a, yeah, like, you know, when I was younger, I probably rarely went 2 days without orgasms.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now if I didn't consciously say, it's been 3 days, it's been a week, I could go a week and not even think about it.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to, it's kind of like doing other sort of things that are good for you. I have to go like, this, it would be good to have some orgasms.
Yeah, like,
good. Right.
I'll eat a vegetable today.
Exactly.
Right.
You know, and I think the other piece of it is understanding that the more often I build that fire, the easier it is to build the fire.
Okay.
So letting it go, the longer you let it go, the colder your water is, the more energy and effort it takes to get it cooking.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So part of that decision is kind of like, got to make sure I remember how to warm this water up.
Yeah.
don't want to let it go too long. And so there's a definite, it's a difference. It's really different.
Did you have the things that you do to build your fire? Are they different from what you would have done? You know, from anything that you would have done in the past? You know, does it look different?
It does in a way. What's really interesting to me is that my erotic imagination is much less significant. It's much more of an embodied thing of feeling and touching and turning on, whereas for a lot of my life I might have started by spending, you know, like 10 minutes just constructing a fantasy.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And really being turned on by that, and now the fantasy is like a really minor part. And that was a real shift that I had to kind of go like, oh, okay, that's not the thing that really does it for me anymore. Used to be, you know, a no-fail way to get turned on. Now I need more physical stimulation.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And luckily I know how to do that, and I know how to connect with my body. And also luckily I know how to use breathing and sound and movement and more of a, it's more of an internal visualization maybe of the energy.
Yeah.
You know, or light or heat, as opposed to a sort of external visualization perhaps of another person doing something to me.
Yeah. Okay.
So it's different. I had to sort of relearn what really works for me and find some new or pathways that I would have started using, but weren't maybe the first pathway or the main pathway.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to kind of be open and run experiments and kind of like, I wonder about this will work. What, you know, will that work? And that's not working the same. Okay, let's try one of the many things I know how to do, and that's why I'm so grateful that I know, you know, and I have lots of tools in my toolkit.
Oh, that's awesome. Let's talk for a minute about female ejaculation. That is something that I also had heard you say you could learn, and I'm aware that there are people out there teaching it. And I've tried to learn just based off of some of the suggestions I've heard on podcasts, but so far I haven't been able to get there. So tell us a little bit about what, you know, what's involved in learning that, and is it, like, does it change the sensation, or is it really just its own, you know, experience? I'm not even sure if I'm articulating this right because I don't know what it's like. So
I think those are really good questions. So yes, it's learnable. I think it's the things that help you learn. First of all, really getting the anatomy down and really understanding the whole erectile network. And by erectile network, I mean all of the structures women have that are made out of erectile tissue, which is the same kind of tissue that penises are made out of. And we have a number of different structures that are that engorgeable kind of tissue. So there's the three parts of the clitoris, the vestibular bulbs, there's erectile tissue under the floor of the vagina, and above the roof. Mm-hmm. And so first, I think it's really important that we learn, A, how to get our whole selves turned on. So how to get in a kind of more of a mind-altered state of reality of arousal. How to get our genitals really engorged. So that's the sort of specifics of all those parts. And then the erectile tissue that's above the roof, which I call the urethral sponge, the bottom of which is what some people are calling the G-spot. I hate that name, but it's not a spot, and Grafenberg didn't have one. But inside that erectile tissue are glandular structures, and that's where the fluid comes from. So I think sort of the next piece of it is really getting in touch with that anatomy, learning what kinds of stimulation it really likes, playing with it at the appropriate time, which is when you're already in high-level arousal and all the other structures are really engorged. And then you need the right tool for the job. It's your own fingers are not that useful because you really they kind of have to reach around and up. And so a curved toy, usually called a G-spotter toy, or a partner's fingers are a great tool for the job. And then usually lots of stimulation. I think it's easiest if you've already become pretty proficient with orgasm. That way you can have some orgasms before you even get to that stimulation of the urethral sponge. And then we can, as we're getting to the orgasm, we can bear down and release. And there's part of it's mental, part of it's giving ourselves permission to let go down below. And that's overcoming, you know, like toilet training and some other pretty deep, intense programming about not letting go and not releasing. I always recommend you have puddle pads on your bed. That way you'll, you know, we'll hold back just if we think we're, you know, we might wet the bed. Just let go of that. So what if you pee a little? Who cares? It's no like you gotta let go of those mind parts of it. And also let go of the pressure, that performance pressure. So it has to just be another fun part of the play where you do lots of stimulation and it feels great and you have lots of orgasms. And if you do that and you sort of create that surrounding, sooner or later you'll probably dribble or squirt or gush or whatever version you do. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. So the first time you taught yourself to do this, did you do it by yourself or with your partner?
I was with a partner. I had now keep in mind, I had at that point taught myself many, many advanced orgasm skills.
Mm-hmm.
So I already could have many orgasms. I had a few experiences with a woman partner who ejaculated, and so I got to see it happen. So I believed, right? Because I didn't used to believe. I just, when I first heard of it, I thought it was a porn myth.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'd never heard of it in school. They didn't talk about it. I just thought it was nonsense or, you know, some other stuff to make us feel bad about stuff we can't do,
right?
So then I had this woman partner for a short time who was an ejaculator. So I got to see it and experience it and smell it and go like, well, that is not pee. That is definitely something different.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had met a number of women who told me they learned to ejaculate. Right. So first I met somebody who was a natural ejaculator. Then I met women who said, oh yeah, I learned how to do it, which all got me going, huh? Well, they could learn. I bet I could learn.
Right.
So that was all in my mind. And then I just happened to have a prolonged, like 5 hours of sex play
mm-hmm.
session that went on for a very long time with a very, 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 very lot of orgasms. You know, one of those
yeah.
wonderful, memorable nights. And it was probably like 4 a.m. or something. And, my friend, my gentleman friend, was stimulating me with his fingers at that point. And I had this huge orgasm and this huge gush.
Mm.
And I was like, oh, that was it. I, you know, so it wasn't like I was trying to make it happen. And then, you know, for a while it would happen under similar circumstances, lots of hours of sex play, lots of stimulation of the sponge. And then I might gush.
Mm-hmm.
And then it became more, you know, if those were the circumstances, then I would gush. And then it started happening easier and earlier and more often.
Hmm. Interesting.
And yeah. So it was a very interesting process. And I'm still, I don't necessarily always ejaculate. It depends on what's going on and the amount of stimulation and how long and where. But also, when I do ejaculate, it is with an orgasm.
Mm-hmm.
It is possible to ejaculate without an orgasm. And that just, that's, I'm sure feels fine, but it's just kind of wet and I don't think it's very spectacular. But the combination of ejaculation and orgasm is a total goddess experience. I mean, it is very internal, very intense. I find it very spiritual. I mean, like in this earthy goddess, not like this woo-woo floaty goddess, but like this, I am the embodiment of the goddess at this moment. And I am blessing my partner with this liquid blessing. So,
oh my God.
Yeah, it's pretty intense. But I think, you know, you have to stay away from the you know, sort of the pressure to perform.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So can we talk a little bit about the orgasms themselves? So my personal experience with orgasm is if I have a peak clitoral orgasm, you know, I'm done for the night. But if I have these internal and energetic orgasms that just can keep going and going and going, then I can keep going and going. And I'm wondering whether the ejaculatory orgasm is a clitoral, you know, a peak orgasm, or is it one of these more wave-like orgasms?
You know, it's so funny because talking about orgasm is so tricky, right? So what I find, this is me, and it could be different for different women, but the more I got in touch with all of my anatomy, and the more I sort of also learned how to turn myself on using my inner muscles,
mm-hmm.
The more it tends to blend together. As far as the sort of clitoral orgasm goes, that hypersensitivity period,
yeah.
To me, is just an opportunity to have energy orgasms and other kinds of orgasms. right? So when you've had lots of clitoral stimulation and you've had an orgasm, instead of just stopping, that's an amazing point to just continue making sound and rocking your hips and pulsing your pelvic floor muscles and imagining your orgasm. And that's a great way for me to just head into energy orgasms.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
right?
Okay. Yeah.
Right? Like, use the hypersensitivity. Like, don't touch it, or if you're with a partner, or you could do it yourself, hold your hand like 3 inches away from your body and just send energy from your hand or your partner's hand into your crotch and then back out again. And so to me, that's like a starter orgasm, right?
That
you can then, right? You can use it like kindling to go into other states. I find that I'm most likely to ejaculate when I'm having the more intense internal vaginal, uterine, you know, anal, kind of all the internal stuff stimulated.
Got it. Okay.
That I'm more likely. But that can all get packaged together. So...
Yeah. Okay. I get it. So if you were giving someone advice, if they're listening to this program and they are having some kind of a challenge related to their experience of pleasure, whether it's that they are having a more difficult time becoming aroused or achieving orgasm, or if their desire is just completely missing in action, like mine was for so many years, what would be your advice on what they should do first to get themselves on a path back to themselves?
That's a great question. I think the first thing is to focus on self-care and self-connection. So don't be approaching this as, oh, now I have another thing on my to-do list, and, you know, I'm... But really start with self-love and self-kindness here. We get lots of practice beating ourselves up and thinking we're not good enough and thinking we're broken and thinking everybody else is just, it's got so easy for them. And, you know, so really kind of starting with our heart and our mind and self-love. And then moving from there into self-pleasuring. And I mean that in a broad, big sense, not necessarily stimulating our genitals.
Right.
So that might mean, you know, getting a babysitter and getting away from your kids for a night, you know, going for a walk in nature, taking a hot bath, taking time to meditate, whatever, you know, the things are that feel self-nurturing to you. And then from there, think about expanding into a more sexual, self-nurturing practice. And I do think our solo sex is the place to start. I like to think our solo sex is our learning laboratory. It's our self-care spa, right? It's our rehearsal hall. It's just everything that we need. So, taking the time, and again, not in a goal-oriented way, but in a journey way, in a present way, taking the time to explore our bodies, find what gives us pleasure. I do think it's very useful to get my book, Women's Anatomy of Arousal, and look at the anatomy illustrations and read it so you understand all the parts you have, and then you can explore in your self-pleasuring what helps your vestibular bulbs get big and puffy. You know, how to play with the other parts of your clitoris, not the head. Because if we're just focusing our sexual stimulation on the head of the clitoris, we're never going to get to these expanded, extended experiences.
Right.
So, and just keep in the pleasure, connecting to the pleasure, you know, put on music if that's what helps you connect. And then, and run experiments. So you are your own learning laboratory, and your job is to run experiments and notice what happens. And when something good and pleasurable happens, something that works to get you turned on, then do more of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, right, the experiments can be just what happens if I put on my favorite music and pulse my pelvic floor muscles to the music, like they're dancing.
Mm-hmm.
What happens if, as I'm stroking my vulva, I make ah sounds?
Right.
What happens if, as I'm stroking my vulva, I make oh sounds?
Yeah.
You know, what happens when I rock my hips at the same time I'm making oh sounds and I'm stroking my vulva? And when you go like, ooh, that feels good, then go like, notice it. Oh, okay. This combination is very pleasurable. Let me hang out and do that for a while.
Yeah.
You know, and of course these experiments can also be done with a partner.
Mm-hmm.
If you have partners, certainly bring your partners into this playful experimentation idea.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, you know, if you were learning to play an instrument, you wouldn't just play duets.
Right.
Right? You have to spend some time with your instrument by yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you touch a little bit on when you were talking about your own history about how talking about sex was really, really hard at first. And I know that a lot of women continue to experience the challenge of how to communicate about sex with their partner. You just sort of get into a zone where you have your routine with someone and you're just terrified to even broach the subject of doing something new or trying something new for fear mm-hmm. of making them feel like they weren't doing it right to begin with, or you mm-hmm. know, hurting their feelings or hurting their pride or something like that. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, for someone who's wanting to go down this road, but they're feeling that fear of, yeah, but what if I, you know, what if this is amazing and I want to bring my partner in, but I don't feel like I can? Like, how am I going to, how would you suggest they break the ice on that kind of conversation?
Another great question. So, and I just want to again say that even though I've been practicing communication skills around sex with partners for quite some time now, there are still times when I don't know what to say or how to say it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, I think this is a lifelong practice.
Yeah.
About communicating, particularly around subjects that are fraught like sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a lot better than I used to be, and most of the time I can be really good at it, and still sometimes I just, I'm at a loss. So I think it's important with partners that we have conversations about our sex lives while we're not having sex.
Mm-hmm. I love that.
Right? We also, I think, need to have learning laboratories with our partners where we're not having sex in the sort of, it's not a spontaneous musical jam. It's mm-hmm. more like, let's practice this riff,
mm-hmm.
right? Where we create, you know, a time and a space and a container where we practice a particular skill. And that also gives us another opportunity to practice our communication skills.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe it's about how you like a body part touched. It might be about feedback. It might be you might do a massage practice. You might do a breathing together. You know, anything could go on in the learning laboratory. But say you've done some solo exploration and you find something that particularly feels good, that's a great learning laboratory to say to your partner, you know, when I was playing with myself, I discovered this thing that feels really good and I would love to show it to you. And I would love to maybe play like, you know, like I'll do it on me and then you can watch and then you can try it and like, I'll give you feedback and, you know, mm-hmm. have it be like this fun, exciting game.
Yeah.
And the thing about partnering with somebody is we want to please our partners. We want our partners to have pleasure and get ecstatic. And it's a big turn on to watch our partners get ecstatic.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we approach it this way, our partners are usually going to be like, wow, that sounds fun. I'd love to see you pleasure yourself and learn how to do it in a way that, you know, really works for you. So That's the learning laboratory. And then in the learning laboratory, one of the things we can also do is create these little shortcuts and cues. So that during our spontaneous sexual play, we don't have to go into a big explanation of something. Right? So, for example, it might be, this is common for a lot of women, but I really don't want my genitals touched until I'm already in a state of at least moderate arousal. Whereas my partner, who's a man, would be very happy to have his genitals touched right at the beginning of sex play.
Right.
And so this is a point of confusion for a lot of people whose partner has the has that kind of opposite wiring, not necessarily even different genitals, but just that sort of different wiring. So it's really useful for us if he's not sure if I'm ready or not for him to start touching my genitals, rather than having to sort of stop in the middle and have him go, well, are you at the point where you're ready to have your, or if he touches them before I'm ready and I kind of pull back a little or something, I don't want to have to stop and go, well, honey, you know that thing we talked about where I'm, you know, where you touch my genitals? Not really, really. Right? We don't want to go there in the middle of our sex. But if in our learning lab, we have a little signal where my partner maybe just has a cue word where he can ask, or he can check in about my arousal level, you know, like on a scale of 1 to 10, like if he knows, don't touch my genitals until I'm like at a 7. You ask, and then I could just say 5 and then he knows, like, we don't have to have this whole list, but we have to like practice that and work that out in a learning lab.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. That's such a great suggestion, because you can have very successful conversations outside of the context of having sex. And then when you're in it, you know, it's a whole nother ball game to try and figure out how or if to say anything.
Right. Oh, and then here's one other tip I think is very useful. Catch them doing it right. Right. So when somebody's doing something and it's really working, really be sure that you let them know, whoa, I love this. This is so good. And not only is it good to kind of catch them while they're doing it and give them that positive feedback with words or sounds, after you're done, I like to do something we call playing the highlights tape. Where each of us will say, like, maybe like three moments or three activities or something that were particularly wonderful. You know, so, and it could be things like just that, you know, when you were going down on me, there was this moment where you put your hand on my belly and you looked up at me and you just looked into my eyes and I felt so loved, right? It isn't necessarily the, you know, the technique you were using when you were going down on me. It might be. But, you know, it could be that, or, you know, your partner or they might come up with like something like really raunchier, you know. Oh, that moment when it got really kinky was so hot, right? You just never know what your partner is going to come up with.
Right.
And because we're in that altered state of arousal, sometimes we don't even remember. Right. And then they say it and we're like, oh, yeah, that was really, I forgot about that moment.
Right. Right.
And that's a great way to sort of, you know, give really, you know, positive feedback in a way that people can hear and remember and learn, you know, get a repertoire of things that, you know, your partner usually really likes.
Okay. Well, I think we're at the end of our time. So how can people find you?
They can go to intimateartscenter.com. Intimate, I-N-T-I-M-A-T-E, art, A-R-T-S, center, C-E-N-T-E-R.com. And there's blog posts, and you can find my books there. I have two, and my partner has a couple of books. And there's recorded online courses and classes. And,
That's fabulous. I'll include all of the links in the show notes as well, but I have to encourage anybody who's listening to this episode to buy the book. You must get this book. It has to be part of your shelf, and get two, actually, and give one to a friend, because really, it's just, it's so full of valuable information, stuff that we just don't learn in our culture. So,
well, I encourage it. I mean, I really get so excited when people share the book. I had one friend of mine buy 9 copies. I'm like, wow, 9. She goes, well, I got 9 brothers and sisters.
Wow. Well, Sherry, thank you so much for taking the time to be here today. It means a lot to me, and I know that it's going to mean a lot to a lot of other women as well.
I'm so happy to share, and thanks for giving me the opportunity. It was a really lovely conversation.
So there you have it. If you'd like to see the show notes for this episode, please head over to my website at www.blissrunner.com. While you're there, I would really love you to pick up a free copy of the guided meditation that I've created for you. It's a version of the meditation that I used that kickstarted my own sexual awakening, and I'd love for you to have it. If you enjoyed this conversation and you'd like to hear more candid conversations about women's sexual energy, head on over to iTunes and leave a review. I hope you'll join me next week for more candid conversations about women's sexual energy. Until then, I remain blissfully yours.